Have you ever applied for a grant? If you haven't, is it because you don't know what grants are available to you? Or you feel the competition is too great and you have no chance? Or maybe you feel overwhelmed by the whole application process itself? If you have gone for a grant before, whether you secured the funds or not, you'd know the process involves a lot of reflection, clarity, and strategy when it comes to your business goals and plans for the money if received. And since the grant application process is an area of so much confusion and overwhelm, today I'm chatting with Keith Whalen, the Grants Guy, to talk us through the basics. He's an extremely knowledgeable guy when it comes to this topic, so get your notepads and pens ready. You're going to be blown away by his advice. Welcome to the Marketing and Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business via effective marketing methods while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, and I help business owners just like you build trustworthy connections with their ideal clients. And I do this through engaging conversational copywriting and strategic advice at right time marketing. So feel free to book in a free 30-minute discovery call after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today I'm joined by my guest, Keith Whalen. Welcome, Keith.
Hey, Leanne, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you. So specializing in grants, tenders, and funding consultancy, Keith provides high-level assistance to a local, state, and federal government, not-for-profit organizations, and private enterprises when it comes to planning for and accessing extra income streams, which is something we all want. So Keith has worked in the grants and philanthropy sector in Ireland and Australia across both the public and private sector. He has consulted with and taught at many universities in Australia and even New Zealand. And I actually had the pleasure of sharing an office, as well as many laughs, with Keith when we worked together at the not-for-profit disability organisation Achieve Australia many years ago. He was in charge of sourcing and applying for grants while I looked after the marketing communication side of things. Keith, do you still occasionally work in-house as an employee or basically just contracting now?
All contracting, Leah. Yeah, pretty much across NGOs and not-for-profits across Australia, basically. So brought in on different occurrences and different needs and wants, sometimes to draft, edit, proofread the grant applications, sometimes to strategize with senior management teams, basically, and other times just do the back end, the quittle and the auditing and the evaluation of the grant.
Amazing. So how many different organizations would you be working with at one time? I guess multiple.
Multiple, yeah, and multiple sectors as well. So, you know, it depends on peaks and troughs. And obviously with COVID, it's been full on because of every sector's obviously got subsistence funding from state and federal government, if not local government authorities as well. So identifiably, some of the bigger sectors I'm working in are NGO, not-for-profit, business, aboriginality, cultural and linguistic diversity, which leads into multiculturalism, sports, the arts, research grants for universities, that's huge at the moment as well. And then a lot of talking basically in terms of just what's happening with grants as well. So being invited to symposiums, conferences, Zoom webinar meetings, basically podcasts such as yourself, to talk on where the grants landscape is and where it needs to be in Australia.
Yeah, I love that. And we'll delve more into the whole grant world shortly. But first of all, I just want to hear more about you and your business journey to where you are. Why did you become the grants guy?
Kind of by default. Isn't that how most people define success, basically? You kind of fall into it and then you make the best of it, basically, and then you actually work out a plan how to do it then. I didn't even conceptualize the name, basically. It was given to me, bestowed to me when someone forgot they were trying to do. I was Keith Whalen Enterprises, basically, back in the day when I first went out on my own, and for want of a better name. And then the MC at the event, basically, that I was doing forgot my name. And quintessentially, what does this guy do? He talks about grants. All right, he's the grants guy. And I went, eureka. That's basically it. And the best compliment now I still get is emails and phone calls to the office go, hi, can I speak to Grant, please? Or can I speak to Mr. Guy? And it's the biggest compliment because obviously the branding works at the end of the day. So people look for Grant Guy in the phone book nearly. And that's the biggest compliment I get, basically. But yeah, look, it's my background's in journalism and marketing, and I've always loved writing, and I've always loved teaching as well, which is a big facet of what I do. And certainly the evolution was that I worked in Ireland, basically in the university sector and for some not-for-profits and then for government as well. Came out here, worked for two local government authorities as a grants manager in the university sector as well. And then a number of not-for-profits and charities, as we talked about when we first met a number of years ago with Achieve. And then started a consultancy really in 2012 as the grants guy. And it's just flourished ever since in the past 8 years, quintessentially. And it's grown across a number of sectors. Firstly, I started off in the NGO not-for-profit sector. And then I diversified basically as I saw the needs and wants and really carved out a niche for myself in terms of definitely in sports sector and some of the arts as well, basically. And definitely for small business then as well. So SMEs, basically, entrepreneurs, startups. I've done a lot of work over the past 8 years with that cohort of people. From that then, government have employed me to do their own grants workshops when they've been releasing funding as well. And then advising clients on their own grant applications, as I said, either from acorn to oak in the process, or basically just delving in to assess, review, appraise, draft, edit, per se, play devil's advocate with a red pen, have that objective third party standpoint. So it's quite diverse. I love that about it, basically. Every day is different. And I think that's fantastic. And really, yeah, I kind of fell into it and I've made the best of it. And then I came out with a plan out of it. And it's really something I've been waiting to do all my life. And it kind of came to me through a natural osmosis.
I love that. And just from what you said, we've definitely got the right person on the show to talk about grants. You've had plenty of experience in all industries, no matter where our listeners have come from. So yes, really excited to delve into this. Just to make sure that everyone is on the same page, could you just like explain what a grant is? I believe there's like different types, just to clarify that.
Yeah, I think the misconception about grants, Leanne, is that people see it as a handout or a gift. It's not. It's an investment. It's all about ROI and KPIs, return on investment and key performance indicators. Any grant you receive, they're obviously not looking for their money back, but it's saying they want to see a tangible impact with that funding, basically. So a grant is given for a purpose or a cause or to basically solve a problem or a need, basically, whether that be community, societal, sporting, or infrastructure, as the case may be at the end of the day. So people need to see it like an investment into them. And at the end of the day, even them as an organization, it's about the end user. So even if I'm a small business and I get a capital grant from government or a government agency, basically, as much as it's for me to enhance my business and what I can do, it's about the greater good, which is the customer and the client and the local economy and basically the New South Wales economy and the Australian economy. In other words, how it's going to benefit the end benefactor themselves, which is the user who's going to utilize this facility, service, product that you're bringing to market at the end of the day. So the grant is given basically as a way to, in government, for business, it would be to grow business, innovate business, sustain business, as we've seen with a lot of the capital funding through JobKeeper and JobSeeker, basically, which in some way, shape or form are grants, but not in the theoretical or strictest sense of the word of what a grant is, basically. So a grant is direct capital funding into your organization, program, or you as an organization, basically, to deliver on a certain set purpose, cause, initiative. And that's strictly speaking what a grant is.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, like you said, it's not a handout, it is an investment. And it's already kind of sparked off some ideas in me because there's, I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast before, but up from where I live, there's a commercial cottage that has been up for lease for about 6 months or more. And it's actually been up for lease on and off the 6 years I've been here. And I just want it. I just want it. And then recently when it did go up for lease again, I had a walk through and I'm like, this would be such a great creative space for like entrepreneurs, like they get together, everyone's like, as also as a coaching or a workshop space, add some cool bean bags and funky colors. And but it's like, oh, well, I can't afford that. But it could be something that if I can prove that it's the greater good of the local community, a great resource, then it could be something I could apply for a grant for. Is that right?
Yeah, if you put together an articulate business case. So the three quintessential documents you need to have or expected to have before you even apply for a grant is your business plan, your project plan, and your CapEx, your budget. Now, inherently, if you don't have those documents to extrapolate the information from to populate the grant and amend it accordingly to the questions, you're going to be at default mechanism. You're going to be at a loss already. So if you can put together an articulate business plan to show that if you bring this to the to life, this vision you have for this center, this place, and create a hub, a business hub that is inclusive, that's collaborative, and certainly grants is about keywords and understanding keywords as well, traction points, as we know in marketing, as we know in journalism, basically, and what's going to get, you know, spring off the page to someone who's going to assess it. If you quantifiably, for you moving into a center like that, the obvious question is, if you build it, will they come? And in other words, you're there, but will people use it? And at what rate and what occupancy rate over what period of time? I need the metrics. So as much as I need the words in a grant, I need the data. Yes, substantiation so of stats research. And facts, research.
Yes.
So I talked about the 3 R's, Leanne, right? The 3 R's in grants are research, relationship, and reporting. Research what grants are out there for you. Instigate the relationship with that funding body well ahead of the grants period, and the reporting. Be due diligent about reporting on time, about how you're going to deliver on time and on budget, and doing the evaluation. And that's on top of the 3 C's. To write an articulate grant application is clear, concise, and compelling. That's a good grant application.
Excellent. All right. I'll have to talk to you offline about that idea I've had. Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, 100%. Research will go into a lot of it. And I think it's when I've heard of people applying for awards and things, which I guess is the same kind of thing, it really gives you an opportunity to reassess your business and actually understand where you want to go, because you have to like put that into clear words so that someone else can see your vision as well. So it can sometimes be a really reflective exercise doing a grant, even if you think you've got no chance, just to get ideas out.
Yeah, look, I always ask my clients, do you know how to sell yourself? And everyone goes, oh, yeah, Keith, I'm totally across that. You know, and I'm like, no, really, do you know how to sell yourself? In 20 words or less, you know? So I work off the Steve Jobs rule of 3. Steve Jobs used to say that basically when you met a person or in conversation with someone, by the time they've left your company, they can remember 3 things about you, and that you write a grant application with those 3 determinables. That by the time I finished reading the grant application, I need 3 new value pieces of information I didn't know about this project program in the past at the end of the day. Okay? Because I've been in Australia 13 years, as you can tell from the accent, by the way, if anyone's listening or watching, basically, I'm not from here originally, from Ireland. But I've quantified this, Leanne, that Australians write the longest sentences known to man. All right?
Basically, I've seen a lot of commas in my day.
It's yeah. There's a thing called a full stop, right? It's a beautiful thing. You can use it, right? It's nice, right? And I get this when I get grant applications, basically, and I'm sure it's the same for you when you're dealing with copy with some of your clients, basically. There's this obligation they want to put everything in, including the kitchen fridge. And it's like, I don't need all that. Less is more, okay? So I say, tweet it. And they went, what? I said, you have a defined set of characters in a tweet. Tweet your project proposal in a tweet and see if you can be that clear, that concise, and that compelling in the tweet, and then we can build on that narrative.
Oh, I love that. That is so cool. It's so true. The long sentences, I say that a lot. And I'm like, it's okay. Like a one word sentence has so much more impact.
Yeah. I know.
Storming it in. I had this question for you. I think a lot of people may not apply because they assume that everyone else is applying, they have no chance. What are your thoughts? What do you say to someone who goes, oh, there's no point because I won't get it anyway?
Yeah, I subscribe to that. It's a very high failure rate because it's competitive. It's a competitive process like anything else, and what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. So it's not like, you know, basically everyone gets a prize for turning up. You know, it's a competitive process. So you have to do your SWOT analysis. You have to do your gap analysis. You have to understand market standards and your market competitor, what they're going to be putting in for the same grant. And vis-a-vis, then do you look at a collaborative process? Do you look at a consortium process, basically? To be a silo is detrimental. Yeah. You really need to look in some way, shape or form and collaborating, basically, as well, enhancing capabilities, right? And look at the gap analysis of where you're potentially deficient or in the eyes of the assessor, not in your eyes, basically, as well. So I can't guarantee success, and I never guarantee success for my clients. I guarantee them to bring them to 90% value of the best, most articulate grant application they can put in, because I don't sit in the assessment panel and I can't award them the grant. That would be unethical and lack probity and transparency and authenticity. So at the end of the day, basically, the value add for them is that we're still building a business case. We're still basically putting together some great material they can translatably use in marketing, comms, in other facets of their business. So they're really two for one offer I'm providing them basically when we're creating this content. And it can be duplicitous in the sense that we can adapt it accordingly then for the next grant application or even tender application basically as well, because they shouldn't be in our business just puts all their eggs in one basket and say, I'm only going to apply for one grant. You know, I deal with organizations, certainly a number of not-for-profits. I dealt with a national not-for-profit last year. Sorry, a state-based not-for-profit last year who applied for 67 grants last year alone.
Whoa, 67.
Just in the state of New South Wales. All right. So that shows indicatively two things. One, the amount of grants that are on offer. And two, basically quantifying how many you should be applying for as an entity anyway.
And how many did they get?
Out of the 67, they got 39.
Wow. That's not bad.
That's a good strike rate. So some people have said, you know, it's a very high failure rate basically in Australia, and quantified that's because of a lack of an articulate grant application. It's written in a haphazard fashion. It's sloppy. It's last minute. Most of my applicants, they're there at 4:55 p.m. pressing send and praying to any deity they suddenly believe in to get it across the line basically in terms of
11:59 p.m.
Yeah, we're there. Woo! Let's do that all over again. Yeah. Not the way to do it. Last minute grant applications don't work. And I'm here to tell everyone that basically they don't. And you need a plan, a process, a procedure to write a grant application. Just like you would undertake in everything else you do in your business, you wouldn't do it in a haphazard last minute fashion. You'd have a plan and a process to doing it. And this is what I'm trying to educate people over 8 years, is that you can't do this in an ad hoc fashion because you're not going to get the grant.
No,
because it's going to look last minute and haphazard, and you're never going to see your own mistakes. And this is why you and I quintessentially are in business, because people, the typos, the spelling, the grammars, you know, I know you're Grammarly and you got spell check and everything else basically. But when I get copy, usually it's just littered basically with, you know, the fact that I'm seeing the following three things in grant applications, Leanne: emojis.
Emojis in it. Okay.
SMS language, text language basically, and selfies. All right.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. People are, you know, you can upload. So people say, here's a picture of our organizational team, you know, and a selfie
as
taken
basically. Oh my goodness.
The fact that I'm getting, I'm sorry, maybe keep it to your personal emails, but there's no place for a smiley faced emoji in a professional business document, you know?
I have no words, but.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. Okay. So talking about the application process, what does it involve from start to finish?
From start to finish. Right. Well, obviously you have to have a plan, as I said, in the first instance, or a project or what you want to seek a grant for. Number two, you have to look at basically what grants are out there for you, which is compiling a grants calendar, or look indicatively and do some piece of research or find someone to put together a grants calendar or that research for you, of which there's numerous service providers across Australia to do that for you. And number three, then obviously to sit down to draft it, edit it, proofread it, put together your business case, which is going to take a period of time. Then you submit. And obviously then usually optimally you're talking about 6 weeks to 8 weeks, you'll get a response back basically. A best case scenario, 4 weeks from a government entity, acknowledgement either yes or no. And then obviously you would sign the contract and then you look at service delivery over the defined period of time.
Awesome. And so, okay, so you said about the research and finding them. I do want to ask, where do you find them? I mean, you could probably give me some links and I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, where do you find out about these grants? So we were talking offline about, like even the PNC and things like that. Mm. And I had no idea there's so many out there. Where do you find out? Where do you go? Is there one website for everything?
This huge amount of website. This is why it takes time and effort. The big two words I always use as well with my clients are time and capacity. Time to write the grant and capacity to deliver the grant. And you got to be very mindful of that. You know, I get phone calls from clients going, Keith, we got the grant. And I'm going, great. And then they go, yeah, what do we do now? And I'm like, what you said you would in the application, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? And they're like, oh yeah, maybe we should do that. Oh, we don't have a plan for that. It's a facade, you know. I promised the world, but I did nothing basically, you know. And I always put up the slide from Tom Cruise, you know, to show me the money basically. It's like you went into your bank manager and go, tell you what, give me the money first and then I'll come up with the idea of what I'm going to use it for. No bank manager is going to give you money based on that. So at the end of the day, you have to look at the sourcing of grants. So let's talk about government first, where they're available, right? So obviously local government's point number one. You need to look at your local government, right? So that's dependent on what you are. So that could be economic development, it could be community services, it could be sport and rec units within local government, okay? Number two, state government. Again, the relevant government department of education, department of health, department of sport and recreation, whatever is pertinent to your sector, basically, and what you are as an entity. Number three is federal government. And the big two in federal government are Grant Connect, which is a fantastic resource, which highlights a lot of the federal funding that's out there. Grant Connect, great website to look at. And then actually business.gov.au, which has the likes of the Business Accelerator Program, the Entrepreneurship Program, huge amount of grant resource on that, including templates, which is key as well moving forward in terms of a business plan template, a marketing template, all of those things, free, gratis, you can download them, fantastic. One website I do want to highlight, which is actually Interstate, which is fantastic for businesses, is actually the Queensland Department of Business. Great resources on grants, including a dedicated YouTube channel and a dedicated webinar series, basically, they have as well. So Queensland Department of Business, state government level, are fantastic resources on grants, which are holistically just, you can transverse them into New South Wales and use the same logic, rationale, rhyme, reason, and sense as well. So you got to be mindful of that, basically. They're fantastic. On the philanthropic side, obviously, you think about a company in Australia, they usually have a trust or foundation, right? It's a taxable incentivization for them, as well as part of their corporate social responsibility. So if you can think of a company, you know, whether it be Kmart or Coles or Woolies or Caltex, we just did a grant application 2 weeks ago for Honda Foundation. So it's an indicative, basically, show you that. There's a number of private ancillary trust funds then, which are managed by the likes of ANZ Trust or Perpetual. They are set up in perpetuity maybe 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 20 years ago by families wanting to have a social impact or community impact, giving back to pertinent causes, usually religious, usually education, usually sport, usually health, usually Aboriginal, usually the arts as the big hitters, basically. Health and education are the big two hitters really in this country in terms of philanthropy, what gets the most amount of money. So then you have resources. So for instance, the grants guy, I do grants calendars. Then you have the likes of the Grants Guru, Grants Hub, Our Community, which are all Melbourne-based entities, which are fantastic resources as well. So optimally, you're going to pay a service fee of a couple of $100 to get an annual subscription. You'll get a fortnightly email with a list of emails. Well, the way I do it differently, basically, is I tailor it specifically to you. So you'll come and say, this is what I want. I'll give you the top 10 grants you should be applying for. The other ones, not to diminish them in any way, shape, or form, are fantastic resources as well, but they do generics. You still have to trail through them to see what you want, and you may have to go through the agricultural grants as much as anything else. The other good resources is Strategic Grants out of Brisbane. That's really, really good as well. They're a great entity as well, but they're the ones, Grants Hub. Pro Bono Australia is really, really good as well, another Melbourne entity. Melbourne's the capital of philanthropy, quintessentially in Australia. Pro Bono Australia, and then Philanthropy Australia itself are really, really good. And then the overarching one, which kind of delves into fundraising and sponsorship, which is the Fundraising Institute of Australia as well, FIA. That should keep people busy and a lot of homework.
That is insane. Like, I just automatically thought all grants were just local government, state, federal, that's basically it. I never even thought about the family-related ones you said, like a setup.
It's huge. And
amazing. Like, yeah, I would never have thought.
And certainly with my working with the different ethnic groups across Australia, basically, as well, is huge. You know, I've done work with the Arab Australia Bank. I've done work, basically, with Italian and Greek cohorts as well, basically. And it's huge, the amount of money that goes back into those areas from people, obviously, coming from that ethnic background as well. So whatever your ethnic background is, make sure you look at the available options for you as well, basically, on top of that as well. And same with them with other private and public schools as well, basically, as I talked to you offline about the alumni network, which is huge, not only in terms of fundraising and sponsorship, but obviously garnering grants funding as well, which is huge. So there's a huge amount of options. The problem, as I said, is time and capacity. Who's going to do all that for your organization? You're busy running a business. You're busy being a volunteer. You're busy being a mom and dad. Where are you going to find the time of the day to do that? And that's where usually I come in, or another consultant comes in, and basically an optimum hourly rate, basically 1 hour, 2 hours, whatever the case may be, to troubleshoot it or to give you that roadmap, basically going, here's where you are. Here's where you need to be. This is how we're going to do it.
Oh, I love that. You could go down a rabbit hole for sure.
Yeah.
And you're like, I just spent the whole day searching for grants.
You could. And you'll go off on tangents. You know how the web works anyway. You'll just go everywhere. There'll be pop-ups and everything. And you would spend hours and hours and hours. You do need someone to delineate. You'll get to a point. So the commentary around that in Australia is that most people, any human being, Joe Bloggs walking the street, could do a grant maybe between 5 and 10K on their own. Right. It's just, as someone said to me recently, the most uncommon thing in Australia at the moment is common sense. Right. And that's all you need for the 10K grant. You just need common sense. From the 10K to 50K, you're going to need someone. definitely. But from the 50K above, you're definitely going to need an industry consultant or someone who's au fait with the grants process and has sat on either side of the fence. So I've been lucky and privileged to sit on both sides of the fence. I've helped design, build, and encapsulate grants and assess grants and review grants and sit on assessment panels. And I've been at the other side of the fence as an applicant and assisting my clients with actually applications as well. So I've a holistic knowledge of how it works as a system, how it needs to work. And quintessentially, when I go into my clients, I just play devil's advocate and sit at the end of the table and go. And they love that because it's matter of fact, it's value for money for them. We're in for an hour. We cut through the gray because normally, as I said before, the grant application I get is just full of waffle and wordology and full of blue sky statements, basically, you know. And I always give the analogy, you know, here's an optimum question, Leanne, right? Please provide a brief overview of your organization, right? The key word there, obviously, is brief, all right? I'll still get people going, our organization was founded in 1857 by Father John Joseph McGuire, who came to Parramatta. In 1858, he set up Carlingford High School. In 1850, you're only on 1859. You've only got 500 characters in an online application, and we've already used nearly 200, and you're only up to 1859 in Carlingford.
Yes. Well, that question, straight away, I went kind of blank. Like, where do I start? I'm still.
You got to focus on the keywords.
Yeah, that's really interesting. People definitely would need your help, I'm sure, with so many times. Are grants actively promoted or do they just have to be sought? I don't see them really unless someone shared the occasional Facebook or LinkedIn thing. Often it's more about awards, I see, like in the business industry. I don't see grants like popping up going, hey, did you know this grant's available?
Yeah, they are all the time. And certainly the two main platforms I've seen a great proficiency in them when people wouldn't conceptualize is actually Twitter and LinkedIn. Because government are tweeting out the grants basically that are open and closing or, you know, reminding you that it's closing and you should be applying for it in 10 days time. LinkedIn, they use proficiently as well all the time. And certainly the private sector, as in philanthropic trusts and foundations, use all the time. Again, it's subscribing to these. Knowledge is everything, obviously, in life. So it's knowing where to go to look and then traverse it basically and be inclusive of that. So a lot of this, government are fantastic. They're very transparent about it. They'll advertise them on their website. They'll advertise them to their social media channels. They use other networks to do that as well, basically. We just did one yesterday that I was part of the webinar one with the Department of Justice and Community Services for Cultural and Linguistic Diversity funding across Sydney, which was up to $4 million over 2 years could be applied for, basically. So, you know, and same with the small business as well. So, you know, you got to check in. If you're a small business, you know, you got to look at Chamber of Commerce. You can look at RDA, Regional Development Authority. You got to look at your BEC, your Business Enterprise Centre, basically. Who's got the Business Connect contract in your local area, basically. I know, Realize would have it in southwestern Sydney, basically, as a service provider there. So, again, you just got to network. People can only help you if they know you exist. So the obligation is on you to go out there and find it. But the resources are there, whether it be through websites, social media, and networking. And this is what I advocate, the big thing. This is what I talk about, the relationship building, right? So, you know, people accuse me of being at the opening of an envelope, basically, and cutting ribbon and kissing babies like politicians, basically, right? But it's quintessential, right? People can only support you if they know you're there and utilize you even as a business. That you know you're there, basically. And some of it would be defunct. You go to a network evening and you come back and go, that's 2 hours of my life, I'm never getting back again, basically. But ironically, and I've learned this through the osmosis and karma, basically, you're handing out business cards. 2 years later, you get a phone call out of the blue going, hey, I'm applying for a $75,000 grant. I've got a $5,000 budget to employ an industry specialist. I met you 2 years ago at a networking event in Ryde. You seem to be the guy.
It's 100% a thing. I've had that lately. I've had some people coming out of the woodwork. I met them a year ago or something and then suddenly come back and go, hey, I'm ready to do copywriting now. It's pretty much as you need it. And, you know, a grant is, I mean, obviously it should be something you're regularly applying for, but maybe you're just not in the right space when, you know, you usually meet. And you just keep on, that's why I say, you know, keeping in touch via emails or being very active on social media. So you're always front of mind. So when the right time comes along, they know who to knock on, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously, you know, it's about being shrewd about it. So I do a lot of workshops for politicians. So I've got another one coming up with a federal politician. I've done about 27 in the past couple of years, basically, for state and federal MPs across Australia. And that's great promotion for me. That's just me networking, going, look, there's a government grant available. You'd like to see grants coming into your area, basically. We can put on a joint workshop together with co-branding. So the grants guy is up there and your MP, basically, and it's great for the greater community good. You get more people applying for that grant, more grants potentially coming into your LGA or your electorate. And by default, they're actually promoting me and promoting the brand because my logo is up there. So I'm getting great geographical and demographical traction. So my growth areas, Leanne, you know, in recent years have been Tasmania, WA, Northern Territory, and particularly South Australia, the amount of work I've done in South Australia in the past couple of years. And then New Zealand spiked as of 2016 because I started teaching at Massey University over there. And from that, basically, you get more and more inquiries, basically, more and more stuff. And because of that, you got to look at, you know, as a business, you got to look at, well, what's the niche? How do I plug that niche? Can I plug that niche? Am I the person to plug that niche? Or do I need to be a more tailored approach in what I can do, basically, that I can't take everything on board? So as much as I have a very wide spectrum as the grants guy in terms of what I talk about and who I talk about too, I can't do everything. There's still only 24 hours in the day. And it's been realistic for your customers in that regard as well. And that's a very important point, you know, that I wanted to make to everyone today who's listening to the podcast, basically, is that, hey, you know, there's people there for you. And even for your own business, basically, don't try and solve the problem all the time or all the problem or be there for every customer because you can't. But if you have a targeted approach, you're still going to reap the rewards and reap the benefits at the end of the day, basically, because that cohort will suffice and still allow for growth in your business.
Yeah, for sure. And I did ask, like, obviously, because you do a lot of things remotely apart when, I mean, even if you're teaching, you're doing a lot more webinars than you probably were previously.
Yeah. I mean, well, certainly since COVID. Yeah. I've been basically, it's crazy. I haven't left this seat, I think, basically in about 3 or 4 months, quintessentially. And I have changed my pajama bottoms if anyone's querying, basically. I just put on a different shirt every day, at least once, you know. But it's basically, you feel like the newsreader is just locked in at 6 o'clock. It's been very interesting. So my work days went from Australia through a 9 to 5, and then Europe would log on at 5 or 6 p.m. and then I'd work maybe till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night because I'm doing webinars back into Europe. So I was doing 12 and 14 hour days at one stage. And basically I had to pivot very, very fast from the 23rd of March when I lost 60% of my face-to-face business to 2 weeks later where I got basically 70% of the business back basically through online and webinars. So Zoom, Microsoft, you know, everything basically I've been using. I've been using about 4 or 5 different platforms basically as prescription. I did my first face-to-face meeting 3 weeks ago. And I have my first face-to-face workshop next week at the University of Sydney, in Sydney, basically. And it will be a bit unnerving, I think. It's a whole new world, basically, again, going back, you know. I'm very comfortable anyway with people. I'm very okay, au fait with that. But I think for other people, it's like, oh, my God, it's like a real being in the room in front of me. What am I going to do? Because I've lived in this environment for 4 months, basically. I think we're all going through a stage of transition as a business. COVID's basically enacted that for us, whether we like it or not at the end of the day. But to use a word that's been bandied around quite a lot is consolidation. I think it's a great opportunity for a lot of businesses to look at where they are and where they need to be because of COVID and what they need to value add. And there's still going to be growth opportunities. Yes, there's a recession. Yes, there's an economic downturn. But we will come out of this. And we'll come out of this. And there will be natural attrition, unfortunately, for certain businesses. I appreciate that. But business is an evolutionary facet. It's always about evolving. If you stay stagnant, you die. And basically, it's always about looking about how can I increase it? What's version 2.0 of my business and what can I do, basically, and all those kind of things. So from grants, I've gone more into business development. And we do a lot more around that now as well, and fundraising and sponsorship and alternative revenue streams. You know, I dealt with a CEO recently, and we finished a webinar, and it was a group webinar, and he goes, how did I do? And I went, excuse me? And he goes, look, I really like the way you talk. Can you come in and do some leadership training for me? And I'm like, what? And I was like, he goes, yeah. He said, the way you lead this, I need to find that same attributes and style, basically, the way you need the narrative, the way you need the conversation, the way you interactively deal with people. And like my biggest webinar was for the Australian British Chamber of Commerce, which was very early on in COVID. And we had 407 people attend it.
Wow.
And you're trying to you can imagine what that patchwork quilt looks like of 407 different heads across your screen, basically, where you're on 4 or 5 pages of Zoom, basically, to scroll between, you know. And that was hard because you got to keep the momentum as a presenter all the time, basically. You got to keep 407 people entertained every nanosecond. That's pressure, but I love that and I relish that. And that's why I love the grants probably. I love the deadlines. I love working towards that basically in a planned, perfunctory manner, basically. And I try to instill that in my clients and they say, see great value in that, not only for grants, but for their business overall.
Well, that's it. Like I said before, it's a great, you consolidate, you reflect. And COVID's obviously been a major wake-up call for a lot of people who are just running things, business as usual, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, oh, I have to shake things up now. And, you know, I also, with the webinar thing, which is why I did a few weeks back, the webinar on webinars, because I was also, I'd never done one before, and then COVID hit and these series of workshops had to be turned into the webinar world. Yeah. I'm like, all right, time to get onto it. And then I did a bit of a training on how to improve that engagement experience, which I shared the other day. And it's had a really good impact. But I guess, yeah, like what you can do is easily do it all online, because I guess a lot of it is behind the scenes, just like the copywriting. Like you just need a computer to type things up. You just have that initial conversation with people. So you don't need to have those face-to-face interactions. So I guess you're lucky in that regard.
I am lucky in that regard, but saying that, I know what my strengths are as well, Leanne, which is the face-to-face, and I do miss it because it is my forte and it's what I'm good at. And I'm not just saying that being egotistic. I'm saying that in terms of the feedback I'm getting in the questionnaires and how engaging I am, basically. I remember one person said to me, the workshop I ran recently pre-COVID, which was, I think it was about 30 people in the workshop. And she said, Keith made me feel like the only person in the workshop, and it was like one-on-one tuition. He was that good that he listened to everyone. And that's a huge compliment for me. And again, I only, you know, that was something I didn't realize that at the outset. I didn't realize I had that capability. And it was only through feedback. That's why it's so important, basically. And I'll say that in terms of grants, you need to get feedback as well as to what you did right, what you did wrong in your application. But this is why we have business mentors. This is why we have business coaches. And in certain ways and shapes or forms, I've turned into that for a number of my clients. I've become translationary, where they go, just sit on my left shoulder and play devil's advocate while I make this decision.
Oh, 100%. You have to be the business coach, because you're guiding them along with their business plan, and that's to get the funding and ideally that plan to execute as well.
Yeah.
You can't force that to, you know, you can only do so much. What do people, you think, struggle the most when it comes to applying for a grant, and how do they overcome it? Do you think it is just getting that clarification of what they actually want and what they actually do?
Yeah, it's clarity of purpose, exactly, Leanne. It's why are they going for a grant in the first instance, and then are they going for the right grant, basically, and are they ready to apply for a grant, basically, based on what I've said about having a business plan, a project plan, and your budget in line and in order, basically. Otherwise, they're being reactive rather than proactive, Leanne. And they can't afford to be that, you know what I mean? Just because your industry competitor is doing it, we do it. Like, the two words I hate the most, right? I don't know if you like this either as a content writer, right? Copy and paste, right? Oh, my God, right? Let's put in the exact same application we did last year, verbatim, without changing anything. And I went, did you get the grant last year? No. So why do you think, based on that logic, you're going to exactly do the copy and paste and get it this year? Oh, you know, the should be right mentality comes out, basically. It'll be all right in the night. No, it won't, okay? And that's why you're paying me to say this to you, right? So at the end of the day, it's about having a plan. And people, when I say that to people, are like, oh my God, a plan.
This I heard plan about scammy as well. I'm like, am I going to lose my idea? I don't want.
Yeah. So what I say to people is, use your phone. Auto-dictate it in the first instance. That's your first incarnation. That's your first draft of a grant application. Listen to what you're accentuating. Look at the keywords you're saying. Listen back. Pick out those words. Utilize those words and write those words. And I do a number of different writing exercises with them. I do 4 or 5. Okay. And basically it's about, you know, different from using the alphabet game the whole way through to basically using bullet points, different scenarios. And we clearly ascertain then basically what the cohort of the message is, what the clear message should be, and how to manipulate that into something that reads well. So a lot of what I talk about now, Leanne, is another course that I'm teaching, is business storytelling. Okay, where you've come from as a business, where are you as a business, where you're going as a business, which is different than your media and comms, right? They complement the media and comms, and you still need media and comms, right? But business storytelling is huge now in Australia, and it's on the cusp of even getting exploding even bigger. So there's a number of industry practitioners out there, basically. I teach at University of Sydney, and I teach at a number at ANU in Canberra and University of Adelaide in South Australia. And it's huge. Now, we don't just get the corporates coming in. We get charities coming in. We get community agencies coming in because they want that clarity, because business storytelling is about oral storytelling as much as written storytelling as well. And everyone has a story. And the quantifiable fact that I love is people remember stories over facts.
Yes. And we did cover that a few weeks back with Rashida talking about storytelling. She's a fellow copywriter, but she does a lot more storytelling than I do. And ironically, after we did the interview, I was a week later in Jindabyne, and on our travels, we stopped into a cafe, I think it was Goulburn or something. And it had the story of why they started the business, like painted on the, on the wall. And it was also on the coasters or on the mug or something. And I'm like, now I'm going to start seeing storytelling everywhere. And it's just, it's really about resonating, I guess, more with the people behind the business, which is why I love about pages and things like that. And so I guess it does have to be emotive when you're doing a grant application, that the panelists are ultimately human, aren't they? So you do have to kind of tug on the heartstrings a little bit.
Just a little bit, though. Just a little bit. We still need rhyme, reason, sense, rationale.
That's strategic.
Government like to call it TQM, right? It's the land of acronyms and grants, right? So TQM, right? Total quality management, which means basically project rationale, project methodology, sustainability, basically all those kind of components, right? So because government are risk averse in terms of funding, right? So they want a risk management matrix or risk management plan as part of your application as well a lot of the time. So you need to emotively, yes, but I would temper the emotively maybe to 10 or 20%. The rest of it's pure business case, and more importantly, it makes dollar sense to invest into this. It's actually a quantifiable investment opportunity.
You think of the Shark Tank arrangement, right?
It's really much that. And people, this is what I'm saying. That's why Shark Tank is a perfect analogy, because, you know, you've got to know how to sell yourself. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. Every client goes, hey, but Keith, I've been in business for years and I've been doing this. I know how to do this and that. Yeah, but you're thinking from your perspective. How do other people look at you, basically, as a business? Why would they utilize your services? It's many things, Keith, really. Really, I'm more about specifics than generics. What would be many things? Lots of things, Keith. You know, it'd be hard to quantify all the things we do. Right, you've lost me at hello, you know. So it's basically, I say to my clients, you need somewhere between in the spectrum of little old lady and secondhand car salesman from Parramatta Road. That's where you need to be in selling your business.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. Thank you so much for all your tips today. Brilliant. I will definitely get lots of links from you as well to put in the show notes. And I'm sure you'll have lots of people contacting you for further advice, because you are definitely the grants guy. That is definitely the right branding for you. Now, I always ask my guests this: how do you manage your health and wellness?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I live in the Central Coast, so I'm right beside the beach. And it's been fantastic for me over the years in terms of de-stressifying and tuning out and leaving it behind. And so I'm very lucky. I just go for a walk on the beach, basically walk the dog, and we go down with the kids and the family, and we're privileged and lucky to have that. And it's beautiful. I love living in Australia. I love this country. I love the opportunities afforded me as a country. I'm a very proud citizen of this country as well. But I think living where I live, I won't say it's God's country, because everyone everywhere I go in Australia tell me, oh, welcome to God's country. I'm like, surely somewhere's purgatory, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, but the beach. It's been amazing. I go for a swim, go for a surf, I go for a walk, and just clears the brain. And I listen to a podcast, or I just listen to nothing, silence. I was in Canberra at the weekend. I went to the Writers Festival, and there was a lady who produced a book called The Sounds of Silence about turning off the garble and clarity of focus and embracing silence, because people are unnerved by silence. So it's like, I can't be alone with silence. I need noise of some description. I need to be listening to something or watching
something.
I've heard
about like the traits and things for a whole week.
She did that. She went to one in Queensland for 13 days where you couldn't speak to anyone for 13 days. And you're like, and she went with her husband as well, which is very interesting, you know? And it was all sign language.
Anyway,
it's
fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard that people, for those I know that have gone, that there were many people who left because they actually couldn't handle.
Yeah, the silence. It's unnerving. It can be, yeah. But I'm very lucky. That's what I said. The beach has been the best thing. I love living by it. I love looking at the Pacific Ocean, basically. And it's great. It's a great place to live. And that's really been my saving grace, I think.
Oh, I love that. I should, I go every now and again. I go to Terrigal and get our fish and chips from that.
Yes, on the corner. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, know it well.
We go there. Oh, I think we've been there, well, not this year, but yeah, last year, like Mother's Day, every couple of years. Awesome. And so how can people connect with you?
So check out The Grants Guy, thegrantsguy.com.au is the website. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, so feel free to join me there basically as well. We've just put up a whole series of new videos on the website as of the past 24 hours as well, so check those out as well. I'll be advertising, I always, on my Twitter handle, and it goes up on the website as well, all the forthcoming workshops that I do as well, so check those out. My concurrent ones are at University of Sydney Centre of Continuing Education. I'm always doing one there, usually every 6 weeks. And that's usually on grants writing, tender writing, and business storytelling, the big three that I do at the present time. But that's how you can find me. Yeah. And my number is there on the website as well. So feel free to give me a call.
Love it. Thank you. And yeah, I'll be chatting with you offline as well, I think. And so thank you so much for joining us, Keith. Lots of valuable information there, I'm sure, for anyone who's even heard the word grant and not known what to do about it. I think you've given us lots of clarity. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Leanne. Take care.
Thank you. And thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find show notes to the episode at marketingandme.com.au. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating and review via your podcast app or at ratethispodcast.com/marketingandme. If you're interested in connecting with me, feel free to reach out via LinkedIn. Just search for Leanne Shelton. And if you want to learn more about generating more leads or outsourcing your copywriting to me, head to my website, righttimemarketing.com.au, and book in a free 30-minute discovery call. Until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.